This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hello, welcome to this podcast. My name is Anne. I've been a volunteer here at Joy for 17 years. Please continue to support Joy. This is our 25th year and we need community support by way of donations and memberships. Support Joy now during Radiothon 2018. Head to our website, click donate now, joy.org.au.
Broadway icon John Cameron Mitchell channels the essence of his glam rock icon, Hedwig and the Angry Inch, for one night only at Arts Centre Melbourne this July. So put on some makeup, turn up the A-track, and pull the wig down from the shelf. John Cameron Mitchell, July 10 at Arts Centre Melbourne. Book now. Joy sponsor.
This is Joy 94.9. You're on The Escape Hour, Joy 94's food and travel show. My name's Russ Masterton. I'm here today with Fiona Brooke. Mark Adams, Stefan is travelling. God bless him. We've had some new members today, and we would like to thank each of you very much and welcome you to Joysterland. We've got Barbara from Castlemaine, Peter from Northcote, Alan from Thornbury, Sally from Fitzroy, and Harry from Epping. We love you guys
and thank you so much for joining.
For becoming members. Don't forget we've got a big prize coming up at the end of this month for anyone who signs up for membership during our sign-up month, and we will come back and tell you all about that prize after the show. But for now, we have the best guest in Melbourne on Joy 94.9 today, don't we, Mark Adams?
We certainly do. Today we're talking to Victorian Ombudsman. Most people don't know what that does, so we're going to ask Deborah Glass, the Victorian Ombudsman, the first woman to fill the role.
Indeed.
What is it? What is your job? In 25 words or less.
Well, the loose translation of Ombudsman is Defender of the People.
Mm.
So that might give you some idea of what I do. I think people tend to know us by the kind of headlines we attract in the papers, which usually start Ombudsman slams or something like
that. Yes. It makes it sound like a wrestler.
Possibly, but what that doesn't really capture are the 40,000 complaints I get a year from people who are concerned about something that's happened to them. What I deal with are complaints about government services, state and local government, so that could be any one of the 1,000 agencies, departments, councils in Victoria.
Right, and ranging from some pretty hefty concepts that people have legitimate complaints about, and I guess some frivolous matters as well.
You get everything in this job. And you know, of those 40,000 complaints also include many, many complaints that are outside my area of responsibility. People will complain about the quality of the flowers they get from the local florist, and actually that is not the Ombudsman's problem. So, because they, you know, they've vaguely heard of the Ombudsman in connection with complaints, but they don't really know what I do.
I said that one.
Brass.
So it is important for me to get out there and say, you know, if you've got a grievance with some part of state and local government, that's what the Ombudsman can do. That's what the Ombudsman can step in to help.
You're not necessarily going to be the politician's best friend.
Generally not. No, that's true. I mean, look, one of the great things about being the Ombudsman is that I am a constitutionally independent officer of Parliament.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm appointed for a 10-year term.
Yep.
Which, as I like to remind members of Parliament, is 2.5 times a government term.
Yeah.
So they're kind of stuck with me.
What colour is...
And what that means is that I have a role that is, or at least ought to be, above politics and above, you know, whoever is in the seat of the time.
Yeah. So getting to become the Victorian Ombudsman is not a normal path. Not many kids go to school and state that's why they want to be a doctor, a lawyer, a teacher, something, but very few people sit there and say, I want to be the Victorian Ombudsman.
Right. I didn't know what the Ombudsman was when I was
so take us through
up.
Take us through the journey, because you started off in Melbourne, but you've been all over the world with your various roles, fascinating big roles that you've taken throughout your career. It's an impressive career.
Well, I did law here in Melbourne, and I did law at Monash, where I went there. It was at the only one of two universities at the time. It was the one that I thought had a social conscience. And I worked very briefly as a lawyer and decided very quickly I didn't want to be one. So
a lot of law graduates do.
I've heard that too. Interesting.
It's harrowing.
This was the early 80s.
It's a lot of shoulder pads. A lot of people smoking
big
offices.
Hair, big shoulder pads.
Cigarettes absolutely. In the office.
I only had one suit actually at the time, and it was navy blue and very conservative, and the skirt went down to sort of mid-calf. And
perfect.
And a pair of sensible shoes.
Which wasn't you at all. It wasn't you at all, was it?
Oh, yeah, of course.
And you're like, this law business just really isn't going to work out.
Well, yeah. it just did. I think I knew on before the end of my first day that this was not for me. But I'd studied all that time and I didn't have any money and I needed to earn enough to do something with myself. Yeah. And that's what I did. I worked long enough to get my one-way ticket out of Australia.
And where did you love to first?
Italy, actually.
Yeah.
In fact, there's a funny story about. Melbourne in the 80s is. You may or may not remember, actually.
No, we do. We're old. We're old.
Born to the 90s.
Max Young, Fiona and I, we lived it. We loved it.
Well, yes. You might remember Melbourne as being a very.
Dour.
Very dull place. Mm. Certainly, sort of food and drink wise, it was the land of sort of processed white bread and
male pale and stale
cheddar. Well, I'm thinking, yeah, absolutely. But from a food standpoint, powdered coffee, that kind of thing.
Yes,
and it was a place that I was very keen to get out of. Didn't feel like me, and I wanted to. And I said actually, the first I tried. The ghastly stuff they call coffee back in the day, and I thought, I'm not going to have any more of this. And I decided, as the first port of call was Rome, that I was going to drink a proper coffee on arrival in Italy. And this is winter of 1985. It was January. And we arrived in Rome. It was a very long flight from Australia, totally jet-lagged, totally confused. It rocked up to this pretty crappy little B&B that we'd booked in at. I think it was about 5:30 in the morning, so of course they didn't want to know us until midday. So, there we are, sort of out on the street. It's dark, it's cold, we dumped our rucksacks and sort of headed into town. And I thought, right, I'm going to have this coffee. So there is a bar, it's sort of shimmering in the cold, early morning light in winter Rome. And it's by this time it was about 7 in the morning. And it's this beacon of warmth. You can see it before us. So we turn up and I thought, right, okay, this is going to be the coffee experience. And you have to kind of imagine the scene because having decided that I'm going to have my first coffee in Italy, I'm going to do this properly. So it's the full Italian experience. You've got to put your elbow on the counter. You don't sit down. On the bar.
Yeah.
Due caffè per piacere. I'd been learning Italian friend of mine who I was traveling with. So, the barman, rather gruff, slaps down two, zzz, buzz, 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 slaps down two perfect espressos, onto the counter. And then, of course, you knock them back, in a single single hit.
Shot.
And I have never forgotten that moment. You have to imagine, this buzz of pure caffeine, going through my system. It was fabulous. Absolutely fabulous.
And knew you'd arrived.
And that was it, that was the beginning of my coffee journey. And what a contrast.
Yeah. To international roast.
So you fell in love with coffee at that point, did you?
Well, I fell in love with proper coffee, yes.
Yeah,
again, what a contrast coming back to Melbourne over 30 years later.
And no doubt that was when you fell in love with travel.
I did, yes.
If you could use that first sip of coffee as the gateway to many, many other travels in many other countries and many, many other cups of coffees and experimenting with many other foods and experiences.
It is wonderful, and there's something
about
when you're in a new place, discovering its perfect flavours.
So Italy, and then you decided to live in Europe.
Well, I travelled around Europe until the money ran out, which didn't take very long, because as I recall, the Australian dollar was sliding horribly that year.
It was about 60 cents or something. Yeah, I remember the 80s. We struggled
then.
Sad. It was someone's great idea to float that dollar, wasn't it?
I don't recall. All I knew was that my hard-earned savings were worth less and less every day, and I'm thinking, I better get a job.
In those days, you had a currency in every country that you went to in Europe.
You had to change your lira. to your francs, to you know, your Deutschmarks or whatever. It was it was horrible. But I ended up in Switzerland, and I spent 4 years actually working in Switzerland. Again, something I never planned to do, but and I fell into financial services. I started working for an American bank.
Wow. Had that been something of interest to you at all? Was it finance law that you were practicing in Melbourne?
The last thing I had. I wanted to save the world. Actually, I wanted to be I wanted to be a travel writer. I wanted to write. But I realised very quickly that that wasn't going to pay the rent, and
right.
I wasn't going to pay for repairs to the rucksack. So, so I needed a job, and
Switzerland
that's what
it
you
was.
Did. In Switzerland was the home of banking, and.
And the Swiss have got a thing with chocolate and cows, don't they?
Among other things, yes. Yeah. Money also is
oh, yeah,
that's
money.
Right.
Clocks.
Big deal.
Yeah.
Sign up, renew or extend your Joy membership this Radiothon and you could win our major prize. Premium economy flights for two from any capital city in Australia, plus 7 nights accommodation in Los Angeles, courtesy of Joy sponsor Virgin Australia.
It would be
yes, sign up, renew or extend your Joy membership between May 1 and June 30 to be in the draw. Head to joy.org.au to sign up now or call 1300-JOY-949. Joy, 25 years proud.
Anyway, we've got Stefan, our other Joyster on Joy 94.9, The Escape Hour, which you're listening to now, and he's travelling and he sent us in a message saying, I'm listening while having breakfast, overlooking a tropical rainforest and missing Melbourne and you guys dreadfully. Well, we don't believe you.
He's certainly not in Coburg.
That's right. And we wish you a fabulous holiday in a tropical rainforest.
I think it's a bit of a working holiday.
Where is he, though? Does anyone know where he is?
In Vietnam. No, Thailand.
Thailand, okay.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Anyway, have fun in Thailand, Stefan, but we are going back to Switzerland.
You're enjoying 94.9. This is The Escape, and we've got a Victorian Ombudsman, Deborah Glass. We're talking about your international globe-trotting career, which is fascinating. You've done a lot of big jobs. The first big job you did when you hit Italy was have an espresso, and it changed your life. You
absolutely
fell in love.
With Italy and coffee.
Yeah. And then you went to travelling around, you started to get a job, lobbed up in Switzerland, got into finance.
That's what there was.
Yeah.
If you wanted to
finance chocolate and Alpenhornen.
Well, the chocolate was on the side, but yeah. The certainly working in banking was what was around. And there I was, a somebody with a law degree, mm-hmm. but without local qualifications, and I didn't know what I was going to do, but I was hired quite quickly by an American investment bank.
So in the 80s, this is the late 80s or?
This is the mid-80s.
Mid-80s. Mm-hmm. Working in Switzerland in an environment where faxes were still pretty new technology.
Well, I hadn't had a computer before, and the first time I turned up in my the office and there was a computer on my desk. I thought, ooh, what do with that?
So young Australian lawyer, lobbed up. Switzerland, which city were you in?
Zurich.
So it's German-speaking part of the world. And they have Swiss-German, which is another beast entirely.
Yes. It's known in German as a throat disease.
Yes, it is.
Oh, that is
the German word for kitchen cabinet is Küchenkabine. In Swiss-German is Küchenkasten.
I can see the difference.
Yes.
You sound like you've got the flu.
That's so true.
So every K is pronounced as a ch and every SCH is a ch. It's bizarre, but you get used to it.
I have been to Zurich. I thought it was a lovely city.
It's gorgeous.
Really beautiful. And all those lakes and all that water was charming.
It's a handsome place.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, that's a good word for it. And it's very neat. And so how did you find working in that environment?
Well, I found the banking environment interesting, but I realised very quickly, and it was exciting. You know, the whole environment was exciting. I was travelling all the time. I was being promoted very rapidly in the banking environment, which was exciting as well. And then I realised after a few years that I didn't love corporate profits enough to really want to stay in that kind of world. And it was time to think about what next. And that's. And they'd sent me to Hong Kong, actually, quite by chance. You know, after the market crash in 1987, I did a lot of travelling. And I fell in love with Hong Kong.
And it's great energy.
That's a place I want to work. And it turned out that they were, because of the market crash, they were in the throes of setting up a regulator, stock market, financial markets regulator. And I thought, that's what I want to do. I've learned about the financial markets. I know how this works. But really what I care about is keeping them honest, keeping the markets honest. So for me,
which they're not wanting to do independently, are they?
Well, that's why you need regulation, because on the whole, if without a government agency to make sure that to set the rules and to enforce them, people don't necessarily behave.
Not around money.
No, the profit motive can be quite a powerful one.
Yeah, intoxicating to some.
To some, indeed.
Mm. So Hong Kong, I mean, you're making big changes when you're going from Australia to Switzerland and then from Switzerland to Hong Kong. And the culture must be wildly different in the workplace, particularly in a regulatory role.
Very different. But it was fabulous. I loved Hong Kong. I was there for nearly 10 years. And it was... The work was exciting. The people were fabulous. I made really good friends from that period, and they're still friends, you know. So it's lovely to have that very very strong connection. So it was it was an exciting, invigorating time. I learned a lot. I loved it.
Yeah, Hong Kong's got the tiniest apartments in the world. Did you have a little apartment?
I didn't have a tiny apartment. I had an old apartment that was not little. I have been to some of those tiny Hong Kong apartments.
They're special, aren't they?
And extraordinary. I mean, I remember having dinner with actually the parents of a Chinese friend of mine, and the apartment had essentially had a single room off. Wow. Where everything converted, so the table was a folding table that was set up for dinner and then put away when
it
became the bed at some point. So
like living in a caravan.
Kind of. And you really set yourself up into places where you could explore many destinations. So, you know, Europe and being in Zurich, you've got...
Right in the middle.
Yeah, the choice of umpteen countries. Yep. And then again with Hong Kong, did you see much of Asia over that 10-year period?
I did a bit of travelling. Probably not as much as people thought I should have, because there was something about the intensity of life in Hong Kong. I mean, we worked 5.5 days a week. You know, that was Saturday morning was standard working hours. You didn't really even get a whole weekend. So the lifestyle there was so intense, it was so crowded, that I did feel a rather compelling need to get out from time to time into an environment that actually was a bit less crowded and a bit more peaceful. So I was more likely to go to the mountains of Switzerland or somewhere like that than
back somewhere
another city in Asia that was also going to be hot and crowded.
Yeah, straight into Shanghai. So then Hong Kong, and then bounce back to Europe?
From there to London, and I spent 16 years in the UK. And that was, very different. I started out in the financial services environment. I became chief executive of the Investment Management Regulatory Organization. So I stayed in that whole regulatory environment until the body I was responsible was merged into another body, and then for all kinds of reasons, I thought, actually, that's it. You know, this is it's got to be more. Yeah, I had enough. And it was a time when I gave myself a chance to think, you know, what next? And I've often thought about this, and when people asked me, you know, how did you plan your career? And the answer is, I never actually planned it. You know, life was always a process of working out what I didn't want to do rather than what I did. And there are certain things you eliminate because you know they're not for you. So I didn't want to go back to the corporate world. I thought, that's not for me. I didn't want to be a consultant or, you know, any other kind of positions that people would normally apply to somebody of my background. I thought, I want to do something in the public sector. I don't really mind what. And I'd been doing some voluntary work at the time, and I was, I thought it was a way of getting to know London a bit, you know, getting out there and volunteering. Mm. And one of the things I was doing was I was what was called independent custody visitor, which was visiting people in police cells to make sure they're being treated properly. And they're set up by the local councils. There's a whole scheme of independent visiting of police cells. It just got me interested in things like police-community relations. Mm. So I happened to see a job advert for something that was then called the Police Complaints Authority. And I thought, well, why not?
Give
it a whirl, yeah.
And that must be a fascinating job, because there were some big controversies that your office handled.
Oh, yes. Well, I did. Well, the role morphed into something called the Independent Police Complaints Commission, which where I was first a commissioner and then its deputy chair. And yes, I dealt with some big high profile cases over that time.
Yeah, people can Google them. Just Deborah Glass Police, they'll throw it up. You can do some independent Google research yourself. And I know that there are things that you can't specifically talk to because it's a different part of your life, but they're interesting cases to read. And they were quite high profile, and they were high profile news in Australia as well. So they were international cases of interest. And
well, there are things I'm really proud of. I mean, the Hillsborough investigation,
yes,
for example,
that's one of the big ones. Yep.
Is one that I started. It was a year before I left the role, and my 10-year term was coming to an end. And it's one of those times when you think you're going to wind down and hand over, and it didn't happen because the Hillsborough report came out, and I took on this huge investigation, and I spent much of the next year going backwards and forwards to Liverpool, and it was trying to build confidence in what we were doing, which was a challenge.
So a lot of your roles have involved speaking truth to power.
Yes.
Which is a very difficult place. It makes you a rather brave person to do that. Do you consider that as a part of your job? I mean, you've lurched from Europe to Australia to Hong Kong and back. And
I'm not sure lurched is the word I would have used, but thank you for that.
And you've done some pretty beefy, meaty roles that are challenging very powerful people at what they do in a very critical part of what they do and how they take carriage of their matters. Have you found that to be a confronting thing, or is it you just need to get your job right and just do it?
It is about just doing it. I've never thought of it as being particularly brave or particularly confronting. There's something about, and I think there have been times in that role where people have tried to bully me or patronise me, and that just gets up my nose and makes me want to
more determined.
Work harder.
Yeah. That's a natural human reaction, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's I'm not going to stand for that, and this is. And it just makes me more determined to, to do the right thing and make sure they do the right thing.
Well, we love that attitude around here at Joy.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLB, TIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
You're on The Escape Hour on Joy 94.9. I'm Russ Masterton. You're here with Fiona Brooke and Mark Adams, and we are having a journey around the world today with Victoria Ombudsman Deborah Glass, and we're having a great time. Deborah, I've got to ask you, did you love the West End? Because I am a musical theatre fan, and in your time in London, you must have surely seen some fabulous productions.
I saw a few. I had a really full-on job, though, and it was so intense, and it did not respect regular working hours. So there were times when I would go to to the theatre or whatever, and I would be getting I'd pick up a phone call during it, and the police had shot someone, and I'd have to
it was intense.
Yeah. Are you a royalist? After
living here? That's
I just love Liz.
I wouldn't have said that I was one, but I did actually have the privilege of being presented with an award by the Queen herself.
Oh, wonderful. That would have been lovely.
So cool.
It was pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
It did make me change the views I used to have about about royalty. So no, am I a royalist? No, I'm not. But yeah. I respect what
she does.
What she does. Yeah.
I just think she's cute. I love her. I don't know why, but
you get a bobblehead.
Yeah.
There's plenty of trinkets of the Queen, I'm sure, that we can find for you.
Yeah, yeah.
Queen trinkets.
There's a lot of landfill.
Yeah. I'll have you over for a Queen party.
So, you did Laura Melbourne. You decided that wasn't really what you wanted to do from a practice point of view. You lived in Switzerland for a while, then you lived in Hong Kong for a while, and then you lived in London for 16 years. This is a huge path, all for a girl from Melbourne, just armed with a law degree, and out you go. And you've done some really big jobs awarded by the Queen. That's no slouch. I mean, that must be a very defining moment of your career.
It was pretty exciting, yes.
So how did it come about?
Oh, well, I was rather to my surprise, probably about one of the worst moments of my professional life when I was dealing with so many challenging issues. It was just after the London riots. I'd had a whole series of really difficult cases, and I was about ready, in this rare instance, to walk. You know, it was so thankless.
Overwhelming.
It was not only overwhelming but thankless.
Oh, right.
And in the middle of that, I got a letter from the Cabinet Office. You know, Her Majesty wishes to grant you the Order of the British Empire. And I thought, oh. Actually, somebody appreciates what I do. And it was
a rather large
So, all right, today got better.
Oh, what did they give you? Did you get some letters after your name?
It's called an OBE.
Oh, yeah. An OBE.
Nice.
Wow. A piece of paper as well.
There's a piece of paper and there's a kind of a brooch.
Nice.
The bit of gold. Gold cross on it.
Okay, so anytime you go into anything official, you've got your brooch on and...
I tend not to wear it. I brought it into the office because the staff like to have a look at it.
Do they? So
it's fair enough.
That's some thanks from the nation.
It did actually feel like it, yes.
Yeah, because tough job. And speaking truth to power is a very challenging place to be. And so after 16 years in London...
It was time to come home.
Time to come home. So had you visited Australia much in that 30 years?
Oh, yes. I've got family here. I've always come back and to see family, but I never thought... When I left on a one-way ticket, that was going to be it. But there was a point, and I think Melbourne evolved. So I saw how it was changing in the course of the 80s and 90s and thousands. And I had noticed that the quality of the coffee had improved.
I know, we're pretty hip here these days, aren't we? It's all
the quality of public transport had improved, and I could see that it had become a different kind of place. It was more diverse. It was more inclusive. It was more lots of things that it simply hadn't been back in the early 80s, and it felt like the right time to come home. And it just quite by chance, my 10-year term was coming to an end at the same time as the 10-year term of the previous ombudsman.
And which is unusual for those things to sync up like that.
Well, this is absolute coincidence. And numbers of people in Melbourne sent me the job advert for the Victorian Ombudsman, said you should apply. So I did.
And then you got it.
And as you see, I got it.
And so you've been in the role a couple of years, and have you had an opportunity to really have that sip of coffee in Melbourne that made you fall in love? Have you fallen in love with Melbourne again?
I have.
Or is it
I have.
So what's that journey been like? Because it was a new city in a lot of ways to live in.
It's been extraordinary. It's been absolutely magical. When I left swearing I'd ever come back, I didn't think that I would ever make this journey again. But I've loved rediscovering Melbourne. I love seeing what it stands for. I love exploring it. I love where I live. I love the seaside, getting out to the countryside. Mm. Yeah, it's great.
Is the role as punishing work-wise as some of your previous roles?
No.
It's a bit of work-life balance.
And it is interesting because people said, oh, you've taken on this really challenging role coming back to Melbourne. And my response is, this is a walk in the park compared to what I was doing before.
Yeah, right.
And consider yourself really lucky.
I do.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a... You know, picking up one day and saying, I'm going away. And then you've led this exciting life for 30 plus years and you've returned to some grassroots. But God, look at all the things you've done.
It's an enormous privilege and I don't take it for granted. I have a fantastic role. I have a great office. I have wonderful people working for me.
Do you have a view?
I'm on the second floor. A view of trees.
Okay, that's nice.
So, Deborah, when you do travel now and you leave Australia's shores, what are some of your favourite places to visit?
Well, do you know, I'm actually really enjoying being back in Australia. And the first year I was here, I didn't want to go anywhere near an airport. You know, I'd done so much travelling, seen so many things. So, yes, I have been... I still love parts of Europe. I love Scotland. I love northern Italy. I love the mountains. I'm a bit of a mountain person. I love walking. So being out there, being out in the hills is something that really moves me.
It really is magical. A bit of forest bathing, as the Japanese call it.
Ah.
So good. And do you have a favourite mountain area of Victoria where you like to hike?
Wilson's Prom probably
stunning.
Has to be my favourite.
Yes.
Grampians is wonderful as well. Mm. Just actually getting out and rediscovering Victoria. I went camping with most of these places when I was a child. I used to go camping at the prom when I was a kid. And it was, I remember doing the Sealer's Cove walk when
I was
five.
Oh, I love that.
Five,
Sealer's Cove is stunning.
Mostly on my father's shoulders. it's been wonderful to rediscover Melbourne, rediscover Victoria. Mm. And I'd rather do that than get on an airplane.
I just got a message from a friend, actually, about dining, having lunch at a particular place in the Grampians. And then another friend sent a photo of us, actually, on top of Mount Stapleton. She was like, oh, remember, here we were on the top of Mount Stapleton. It was a lovely sort of midweek little surprise to get, little text message.
I think it's very healthy for everyone that lives in the city to get out
and
go to places like the prom and our mountain regions where, you know, we're very lucky to have such beautiful regional centres and there's no need to stay, you know, chained to your desk. You need to get out and smell the roses more often.
You definitely do. Yeah. The psychological and emotional benefits are fantastic. And it's like you travel, you could just go to Marysville for the day and wander around and come back and you could feel like you've been out of the country.
Now, Deborah, we have a question we ask all of our guests every week, which
brace yourself,
which is very important. We've been doing a survey for quite some time now.
It's very scientific, Deborah.
We just, as a world traveller, we need to know whether you fold or roll.
Fold.
Okay.
Fold.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? This is what I mean. An intelligent woman is amongst us today. She knows exactly what we're talking about.
Because usually people think we're talking about toilet paper.
No.
You'll be surprised how many people think that's a toilet paper.
Oh, and fantastic. We actually have a listener who's tuned in and has something they'd like to contribute. Russ, have you got that one up?
I'm just getting that one up now. Yep. You'll have to say that. Okay.
We've got a lot of tech problems happening. Yeah. Enjoy 94.9. You can always donate and help us out.
Here we go. This is from listener David. Deborah, I just wanted to say that you do an amazing job holding so many government areas to account, and it's a very important role. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, David. Really appreciate that. That's very nice to hear.
You know I just love the fact that you're so calm and relaxed. I could imagine being in a meeting with you and going in there ranting about something and you go, let's just take this down a notch, shall we?
The flowers weren't that bad.
I might be able to visit that florist again now.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ Community Radio Station, Joy 94.9.
You're on Joy 94.9. This is The Escape Hour with Russ, Fiona and Mark. And what a great show we've had with Victoria Ombudsman Deborah Glass on today. It's been absolutely amazing. You were, during the break, you said you went to your first gay wedding in Rutherglen. How was it?
It was fantastic. It was absolutely wonderful. I mean, the whole same-sex marriage issue was actually very powerful in my office because I have a very diverse workforce and it's something that we all took really personally. And as it happened, Andrew and David had said they were getting married before the same-sex marriage results came out, and we really wanted them to be able... You know, equality before the law is something that is so important to my office, to me personally, you know, to all of us. So it was wonderful. So the wedding itself was in Rutherglen. It was incredibly moving. It was the most beautiful occasion. It wasn't a dry eye in the house, and it was in the open air. So,
so wonderful! I'm so happy for you. Congratulations, boys!
Congratulations to them.
It is time for us to go. We've had a fantastic show today.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.